We were privileged in our trip to see the handiwork of God in the majestic mountains, the rivers, and the lakes that God has created. But you know, and I know, that that's not the pinnacle of God's creation. The pinnacle of God's creation is that He made man in His own image. And He gave us the moral power of choice. We can choose to serve God or we can choose not to. And while your very presence here this morning indicates that you have a desire to serve God, it can happen in life that things get awfully difficult. And that desire can become faded and we can get discouraged. And we can lose that sense of purpose and devotion to that Almighty God. In the third chapter of the book of Hebrews, we're reading about a people who are exactly in that situation. He said in verse 12 to these readers, "Take care, brethren, that there not be in any of you an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God, but encourage one another day by day, as long as it is still called today, so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin." I've been privileged to listen to Rod's classes, and he's done good work. And he's impressed upon us how Peter's letter encourages those who are suffering because of their faith, that they must continue on, and they have reason to continue on because of their hope. We are so blessed to live in this country at this particular time. I don't know what the future holds. But right now we can worship in freedom and we don't suffer the kind of things that those people were suffering. And it may be it's not persecution from loss of job or being thrown into prison that threatens our perseverance and our purpose. It may be something else. The context of Hebrews chapter 3, he goes back and he illustrates his point with the Jews or the Hebrews as they were traveling through the wilderness. And it wasn't so much persecution from their enemies, although they did face that. But I cannot imagine, maybe we can all try to envision what it would be like to have your family traveling through a wilderness land. I'm not talking about a land of ready streams and lakes and running water. No air conditioning, not even a house, just tents. And it's not for a day or two or a week, but for 40 years. You might start out on that journey with the purpose to go to that land that has been promised out there somewhere that Moses told them about. But after a month, it begins to get hot and dusty and weary, and 6 months pass. And a year passes, and 5 years pass. Will you keep on going? Do you still believe in the promise? Is it worth it to persevere? And there are people in this audience who, while not facing persecution from others, suffer day by day physical pain. I don't know what that's like. There's another line under that. I don't want to know what that's like. There's people who wake up every day sick, lack of energy, feeling bad. And after a while, it gets pretty old. Yeah, we've heard about some land out there, some place called heaven. But after 6 months or 6 years, the journey's getting difficult. Maybe it's not that kind of thing. It's the agony of disappointments in one's family and friends. Whatever the case may be, We can be just like these people. We can lose that faith to persevere. We can have this discouragement, this unbelieving heart, and fall away from that purpose that we had. I like to think of this imagery, and you'll understand more why I'm using it as we proceed through the lesson. I think of two men out in a boat on a big lake or a sea. And at first it may seem pleasant as they simply enjoy the surroundings, but a wind comes up and clouds begin to gather. It begins to rain. It begins to get dark. The waves rise. What's going to happen? They fight. They do all they can to keep their boat upright. But after hours or maybe days, they're awfully weary. There's no sight of land. And they may give up hope. But one of them in the boat has a telescope. And he picks up the telescope and he looks out there in the distance, and lo and behold, there is land. And they're drifting in that direction. Now there's renewed energy. There's renewed strength. There's renewed fight. Because there's hope. That telescope is like the telescope of faith that allows us, beyond the difficulties of life, to remember and believe in and see the promises of Almighty God. Look in your Bible at Hebrews chapter 10, if you will. Same letter, Hebrews chapter 10. In verse 23, he said, "Let us hold fast." You want to give up, you're discouraged. But he said, "Hold fast the confession of your hope without wavering. For he who promised is faithful." Some were not faring too well, as you can see in verse 26. Some had quit assembling with the saints, verse 25. Some had given up their faith, but he encourages those who read the letter not to let that fate happen to them. And if you'll note down in verse 39, we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. So while the analogy I'm making is my analogy, it's a legitimate analogy. It's that faith that there is that promise out there. That there is a living hope before us. Hold your finger at the book of Hebrews. We're coming right back. But turn to 1 Peter chapter 1. I've been privileged to listen to Rod's classes as he's driven this home in class after class. How hope will help us in the face of suffering. And I want to read from 1 Peter chapter 1, a verse that you've been studying if you've been in his classes, beginning in verse 3. "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his great mercy has caused us to be born again to a living hope." And the Hebrews use the word living to refer to something excellent. There is no hope to be compared to this hope. And what is it? We'll read about it. And it's assured through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. The very fact of your being here on the first day of the week testifies to your belief that Jesus arose from the grave on this day. And that's the assurance of your hope. "To obtain an inheritance which is imperishable and undefiled and will not fade away, reserved in heaven for you, who are protected by the power of God through faith." The reality of heaven will not help you persevere. The reality of God's love and promise will not ensure that you will not give up. What will protect you in the storms of life is faith, because you will not have that hope without it. If that man raises up that telescope and he said, "There's land, The other fellow in the boat doesn't believe him. It has no impact upon him. Protected by the power of God through faith for a salvation ready to be revealed at the last time. In this, you greatly rejoice. Even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And though you have not seen Him, you love Him. And though you do not see Him now, but believe in Him, you greatly rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, obtaining as the outcome of your faith the salvation of your souls. How clearly does that verse tie faith and hope together and show that it's faith that will enable us to persevere because it gives us hope. Go back to Hebrews. Look at the very next verse after the one we just read. It's in the next chapter. Chapter 11, verse 1. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for. Your version may say the substance of things hoped for. Do not make the mistake of interpreting this verse to say faith is the objective substance of things hoped for. That the reason that things hoped for are real is because you believe them. That is not true. Whether you believe in them or not does not change the fact of their existence. He says faith is the subjective substance or assurance. It's when you believe, and you believe strongly, that you'll have the hope. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And we just read about that in 1 Peter. You haven't seen Him, but you believe in Him. And it's that faith of things not seen. Jesus arose. He ascended to heaven. He's coming back someday. There is a promised land. It's that faith that grants that hope. That it makes no difference how dark the clouds may be, how high the waves may be, how long we must have to battle the storm. We can make it to the land. Look in the text at verse 7. He gives a number of illustrations of what we're talking about to encourage these Christians. We're not the first ones. And if the Lord lets this world continue, we will not be the last. By faith, Noah. Being warned by God about things not seen. In the book of Genesis, when you read about the state of the world in the time of Noah. Again, it's a condition I cannot imagine. I look forward to coming back here and meeting with 100 people. Young and old. And all in between. Who have faith. Faith in God. People who are striving to serve God. There were no such meetings in Noah's time. Genesis tells us that the world was so corrupt that there were only 8 people. 8 people. I don't know how many millions of people lived in the over 1600 years from the time of creation. But 8 people. If you'd have had a gathering like this, you might have had some curious spectators, but you'd had 8 believers. And it wasn't just for a week or a month. God said, 120 days. And Noah built the ark. I don't know if he had ever seen rain. Certainly had never seen a flood like God was describing. Never seen that. It had never happened. Why did he build that ark? The answer is in the verse. By faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence, prepared an ark for the salvation of his household. God said, you build this ark, and this will be the means of saving yourself and your family. Is it true? He had hope to be saved from absolute destruction, but he only had the hope because of his faith. And it's that faith that drove him to build and build and build and build. And it says, in which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. Look at verse 8. By faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. I think my wife thinks that's the way I would take a vacation. Just let's go. Where? I don't know. She's our navigator. She does all the preliminary work. She says, here's where we'll be on this night, that night, that night, and we're so thankful for that. But imagine leaving your homeland, not out of your choice, but because God has told you to. Where am I going? Don't worry about that. You just go. And so that's what Abraham did. He's going to receive a land that he's never seen. Never seen. How does he do it? By faith. It says he lived as an alien in the land of promise by faith, verse 9, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. You know that Abram was about 75. He left Haran and went to Canaan. He lived to be 175. After 5 years, after 15 years, after 25 years, still no land. After 50 years, after 75 years, still no land. And folks, he died without receiving the inheritance. 100 years. How long have you been suffering? How long have you been waiting? I don't believe there's anybody in here 100 years old. Look at the next verse. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. He hadn't seen that one either. But he believed in it. He believed in God, and he was able to persevere. In a world of unbelief, the face of all kinds of trials and difficulties. Look, if you will, at verse 13. All these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance. Remember that telescope? Telescope of faith. Having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they're seeking a country of their own. We sing the song, "This world is not my home." Do we believe it? That's the way these men and women of faith lived. And that's what enabled them to persevere. Back up, if you will, to verse 6 of the chapter where he discusses the essential nature of this faith. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. For he who comes to God must believe that he is. But stop with me just a moment. That will not enable you to persevere. Talking about God and saying, yes, I believe there's a God. We're just saying, our God is alive. Will not enable us to keep on keeping on. There's another part to that verse. Must believe that he is and that he's a rewarder of those who seek him. That God keeps his promises. And while it may seem like the road is long and hard, the storms are awfully difficult, God has promised. And you see that fellow with that telescope. When he looked out there and saw the land, he saw something else. He saw a person with a rope. The rope was tied to his boat. And that person was slowly but surely pulling his boat toward the land. And that person is God. But it's faith in that kind of God that will enable us to persevere in the face of trial and difficulty. Turn back to chapter 6 of the book of Hebrews. These people are discouraged. Some are giving up. What can God do to assure them? Well, one thing he did is he took an oath, but he did something else. In the same way, God, desiring even more to show that the heirs of promise, the unchangeableness of his purpose, interposed with an oath, so that by two unchangeable things, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have taken refuge would have strong encouragement to take hold on the hope set before us. So God made the promise. That ought to be enough. But then he took an oath. I assure you, God says that your hope is real. But there's something else he did. Look, this hope we have is an anchor of the soul. A hope both sure and steadfast, and one which enters within the veil, where Jesus is entered as a forerunner for us, having become a high priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. If there was any endeavor in your life so important to you to give one of your children for it, could anyone question your interest, your desire, how precious that was to you? Our hope is anchored within the veil where Christ shed his blood as the high priest, brought his blood as the high priest. He was the high priest and he was the victim. And the assurance that there is heaven, the assurance that in spite of all the difficulties of life, in spite of all of our failures and shortcomings, is guaranteed by what you testified your faith to this morning when you partook of that memorial meal. The gospel of Jesus Christ and his glorious resurrection on the first day of the week. Not because I preach it, it's not because you read it in this book simply, but it's because of that historical event that testifies to the love of God and the sureness of his promise. And it's that faith that will anchor us in the storms of life. Look at Hebrews chapter 12. When that fellow lifted his telescope in the boat and looked at that distant land, he saw not simply one person. He saw another. Oh, he saw another. No, in fact, as he kept looking, he began to see a number of people. They were dripping wet, but they were rejoicing. It's people he saw who had been through the storm like he had, but they had made land. Hebrews 12:1. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, which I believe is unbelief, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Who are these witnesses surrounding us as we're trying to run this difficult race? And our legs get weary and it hurts and it just seems like we'll never get to the end. Go back with me, if you will, to chapter 11, verse 32. For what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight, women received back their dead by resurrection, and others were tortured, not accepting their release so that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others experienced mockings and scourgings, yes, also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. Now, when we get to thinking our hill is higher than others, our storm clouds are worse than others, our waves are we cannot overcome, read this verse. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were tempted. They were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated. Men of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. All these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what was promised, because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us they would not be made perfect or reach the pinnacle and crown of their faith, which is to receive the hope that they look forward to. I said earlier, I don't know what it's like to go through some of the trials that people right here in this audience are going through. I don't know. But I don't think there's anybody in this audience that's been through anything any worse, or maybe nothing to even equal some of the people that are in chapter 11. That's not to mention Job, the book of Job. And you may say, preacher, you don't know what it's like. That's true. And what would happen if it happens to you, you may ask? I don't know. But here's what I hope you will do. If you see that happening to me, you say, Steve, I want to talk to you and read these verses to me. That first verse we read says, encourage one another day by day. I don't know about you, but as I read these verses today, they're very encouraging to me, and I hope they are to you as well. Look at the 27th chapter of the book of Acts. I told you earlier, you would see why I used the analogy that I did, and I want to look over the 27th chapter of the book of Acts. This is not an imaginary storm that we're reading about. This was a real storm. A real sea. Real waves. Real wind. And real danger. They had set out on a voyage to Rome after Paul had warned them that they probably should not travel at that particular time, but they did anyway. And these very accomplished sailors made a bad decision and left an island where there was harbor and shelter to try to make it to another place. But a strong wind blew down upon them and blew them out to sea. Remember, they didn't have the strong motors that are on the ships today. They had sails. They were at the mercy of the wind and the waves. Day after day passed. Verse 18 says they were violently tossed. They began to jettison the cargo. That must be getting pretty serious. The third day they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. Are they giving up hope entirely? Verse 20 says, when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small storm was assailing us. That's the way that these people would write, and what they meant by it was a gigantic storm. And it says, then all, read it, all hope of our being saved was gradually abandoned. But in verse 22, a fellow on the boat who wasn't even a sailor said to the sailors, I urge you to keep up your courage. That's the opposite of being discouraged. Keep up your courage. For there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night, the angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve stood before me, saying, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And behold, God has granted you all those who are sailing with you. Therefore, keep up your courage, men, for I believe God that it will turn out exactly as I have been told. It's that kind of faith that gives hope. So they kept fighting, struggling, battling the wind and the waves. As they came closer to shore, some were trying to escape from the ship, get off the boat. But Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, verse 31, unless these men remain in the ship, you yourselves cannot be saved. So they cut the boat that was on the ship away, and they couldn't escape on the boat. Some of the prisoners on the ship thought they'd escape with the boat that was on the ship, but they couldn't. You got to stay on the boat. Don't leave the boat. Who would trust a fellow who's not even a sailor? Only those who believe that there was this living God who controlled the winds and the sea and the storms. And the only way they'd live is to follow God's plan. Don't leave the boat. And God has a plan for you, and He has a plan for me. As long as we believe, it will be just exactly as been told, and we'll follow what He said, we can persevere in the face of any trial and difficulty. And the purpose of our study this morning is to encourage us. Whatever we may face today, whatever may come in our lives in the future. And as we try to encourage one another, to stir up our faith so that hope will be real and meaningful. I want to conclude with Hebrews 10. Verse 35. He talks about in the previous verses about their past, how they had endured so much, but they were still giving up. And there's people who have served the Lord faithfully for years, but after a while they get tired and they're ready to give up. He's encouraging them not to do that. He said, therefore, verse 35, do not throw away your confidence. That's another word for faith, isn't it? Which has a great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. For yet in a little while, who is coming will come, and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith. My righteous one shall live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. Where do we fall? Read the next verse. I hope we all fall in the category of this last verse. We are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. Amos warned the people of his day who were not serving God, prepare to meet your God, O Israel. It was a warning of judgment. And folks, if we lose our faith that directs our lives, prepare to meet your God, and it will not be pleasant. If we can assist anyone in expressing reconfirming their faith in some way, let it be known as Together We Stand.